listening to You Talk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Providing unbiased opinions on all things to Utah football and basketball.
Welcome to this edition of the You Talk podcast. As always, I'm Grant Bagby.
And I am Joseph Silverzweig. Hi, everybody. I hope you're all driving safe in the snow today.
And for those of you not living in Utah, may you be driving safe in whatever conditions you're driving
in. Yes, drive safe in all weather. This podcast brought to you by Goodyear Tires. I'm just kidding.
Hey, Goodyear, though.
Yeah,
you hear that? You're welcome.
That was perfect, right? We've got all this winter weather, guys. Just give my agent a call, and we'll get back to you.
His agent is me, and he's my agent.
Yes.
So contact one of us.
Either one will work.
All right, so before we get started, a couple things. First of all, you guys, we're into stats. We try to back up our stuff with stats. And
so you got to back up our podcast with stats, right?
Exactly. We need some reviews, some five-star reviews on iTunes and Stitcher or wherever you're listening to your podcast so that we can be seen by more people and listened to by more people. And on that line of thought, please reach out to us for feedback. If I am looking for feedback. So if you don't even know what to tell us, let me know you're interested in giving us feedback, and I will ask the questions.
Yeah, we've got like a little battery of questions that we want to know.
It's literally four or five questions.
Yeah, we want to know stuff.
Super simple. We just want to make this show better and make sure we're giving you what you're looking for. Reach out to us via email at utalk@gmail.com or reach out to either of us directly on Twitter, Jay Silverswag, Grant TBS, or Utalk Podcast, all on Twitter. You can DM us. So with that, we'll get to our quick hitters. We're going to talk some basketball, and then of course we have a heated Shelly Huntley debate.
Yep,
coming.
We prepared.
We almost started it last week, and Joseph didn't want to lose, and so he said, hey, let's wait till next week.
I like to be prepared for my argument.
So, here we go. Nonetheless, on the schedule, women's basketball playing Weber State. However, got to give women's basketball credit. They're the rivalry game we won last weekend. So, good job, Lady Utes, beating the Lady Cougars from the team down south, whatever we call it. Then we've got Kentucky this weekend.
I don't even want to talk about Kentucky. Can we just pretend that game won't be played and then?
Oh, we're going to talk about it.
Oh, gosh.
So then, listen to this, a change of schedule. Running Utes are going to play Kentucky, and they're going to play Florida A&M, which their logo is like a rattlesnake. So that should be fun. Then women's basketball is playing
Florida. Suitable for the snake-bitten Utes.
There's a lot of men's basketball here. NAU coming up, as well as Nevada, if you want to go that far. But so it's kind of calmed down with volleyball and soccer ending. The other thing I'll mention for volleyball real quick is congratulations to Danny Drews and Kenzie Korber for being All-Americans. Danny was second-team All-American, and Kenzie was the honorable mention All-American.
And she's also, I think, the wife of Christian Drews. She's married to or related to folks on the football team, which is neat.
Yeah,
that is neat. So they all root for each other, and it's been fun kind of watching them, kind of like Bradley and Adora and I were last year.
Oh, yeah, good point. So those volleyball All-Americans are not the only ones. There's also some football Americans, and I don't know if you've heard of these guys before, Joseph.
I don't know. You haven't said their names yet.
Well, I was just going to see if you knew before I told you.
Oh, you want me to guess?
Sure.
Okay, well, it's going to be the punter and the kicker, because it's always the punter and the kicker.
This is true.
And then the best player in the whole Pac-12 is Chase Hansen. So
hands down, not even close. Those are the three. The punter and kicker do have names. It's Magical Mitch, which is my nickname for him, at least.
Yeah, I'm lukewarm on Magical Mitch, but that's okay. We'll roll with it.
Well, it's going to come to an end. His senior season's almost over. And then we've got
Matty Gay.
Matty Gay, yes, of course. So my question to you, as we always like to talk a little bit of recruiting, is does the All-American Awards matter?
The All-American Awards are just about the only thing that matters. So I've done a fairly exhaustive analysis of on-field performance as it relates to recruiting, and nothing makes a difference. Doesn't matter if you win 90% of your games or 60% of your games or 40% of your games. Like, Tennessee still recruits gangbusters, and they haven't won anything in goodness knows how long.
What matter- Is that just based on, like, star rating type recruiting?
Yeah, it's based on a couple of different recruiting metrics, average star rating and what I call RTR plus, which is like a weighted and historically balanced way of measuring recruiting classes across years. As basic as ranking, because ranking can be inaccurate, since you might have, you know, number 20 is just barely behind number 4 and number 22 is way behind number 20.
Right.
Yeah. So I use the Rivals point system to make a more accurate score, where 100 is average for a P5 team, and then it goes up to infinity and down to zero. And use that, because it just works better. So I use these different metrics, and the only things that matter at all that seem to have any impact whatsoever or any predictive value is All-Americans.
Check.
And Power 5 conference titles. Not division titles, not New Year's 6 or other big bowl wins, not national titles. It doesn't matter.
So are South titles irrelevant to recruiting?
Yes. It is irrelevant to recruiting. I think it's great.
It hurts, but I'll accept the next step.
But remember what I was saying? We said we were going to argue about it after the win, that the championship game was the most important game Utah had ever played. That was why. Because it would have a dramatic, measurable, and totally permanent impact on recruiting.
Wow. Lost opportunity.
Yep. That's okay. We're going to be back on. There.
I don't want to think about it anymore.
Oh, it was hard. Okay.
So that's cool.
What's cool about it is Utah's had All-Americans before, but they're always special teams All-Americans.
Right.
Which I say is why, if you look at who's recruiting the very best kickers and punters in the entire world, it's Utah, and it's because of the All-Americans. Now we've got an All-American linebacker. Maybe that means we'll start recruiting high-level linebackers, because I just get giddy thinking about what Kyle Whittingham could do with 4- and 5-star talent at linebacker.
Well, I mean, look at Jalon Johnson, their 5-star.
That's what I mean. There was kind of an open question over the last few years of, is Whittingham finding superior talent that other people are missing and coaching them up, or is he getting more out of talent than other coaches are doing? And the answer is always both, right?
Yeah, it's definitely both.
But to what extent? And Jalon Johnson and Leki Fotu have really added a lot of strength to the idea that if you give Kyle Whittingham 4- and 5-star talent, he's going to get more out of those players than anybody else will.
Yep.
With a few exceptions. And so that's pretty exciting. I mean, Jalon Johnson is one of the best quarterbacks in the nation, and he came in as one of the best cornerback prospects in the nation. Leki was a 2-star recruit technically, but anybody with eyes in their heads saw, I mean, it was just a monster talent, 4- or 5-star talent. So it's been really nice to see, because there was uncertainty there, and I suspected that it was a little bit of both and pretty evenly balanced, but he's proven that in the last couple of years.
For sure. I mean, I've never doubted his ability to coach up talent, but nonetheless, it should be good. I'm intrigued to see what happens with this recruiting class. It's always fun when there's a signing day around, as much as I don't get into it like others. But next week is signing day.
We're actually going to be recording
while
the signatures are coming in. Well, they'll mostly come in at 7 o'clock in the morning. We're not recording at 7 o'clock in the morning.
No, thank you.
But we will be essentially live covering signing day for 45 minutes tomorrow. And we'll try and get that
next week
podcast up as absolutely quick as possible, so that you guys are, you know, immediately privy to the analysis.
And I will also say, at the end of that podcast, I will remind everyone that this is just recruiting. Next year is going to be awesome either way.
It's really all about 2019. There's only about 3 signatures that we need. And if we get them, we need somebody to transfer in at tackle. We need the signature of he's actually already signed his financial aid agreement, but the Penn State linebacker, and then Quandre Mosley. And I'll predict right here and now, with an offensive tackle transfer, Utah will win the Pac-12 next year.
Boom. I like it.
So let's talk about basketball. They played a game this last weekend against the team down south.
I refuse to believe that they actually played the game. If you look at the score, it seems like they didn't play at all.
Dude, it was bad. And there's no defense of it. The rivalry game came and went, and the Utes were dead on arrival, and it stayed that way. It is bad. I mean, look, Yoli's Child is a good basketball player, and he crushed the Utes interior this last weekend, and it was hard to watch. But the crazy thing is no one's really talking about the game because, I mean, who would want to? What everyone is talking about is Larry Kay, his contract, and at which point does he need to get fired, or where is he at? So before we get into the crux of that in our discussion, I want to say if there's a fire Larry meter going from 0 to 10, and 10 means he's out the door, where is your fire Larry meter at, Joseph?
So if I put on my Mark Harlan pants, my Mark Harlan hat.
It does say Mark Harlan on his forehead right now.
Yes, it does. We just wrote it in Sharpie. We didn't do that. Spoiler alert, that didn't happen. I would put him at a 7.
Wow, okay.
I would be pulling him into my office, and I would be saying, Larry, this is year 3, no results. We are paying you a lot of money. And I've got faith in the development of these players, but these players need to stay in the program. They need to all be playing next year. You need to recruit well, and you need to win some freaking basketball games by the end of 2020.
So with me, I think it's like it's somewhere between a 5 and a 6. And that the issue the reason I can't put it that high as a 7 is he's got a contract till 2023.
Well, and the buyout is like brutal. It's over $15 million.
Yeah, and so I don't think the university, Harlan, or the boosters are ready to pay that money yet. So that's the tricky part on how hot the seat could get. Now, should he be in a hot seat for the transfers and the results and everything else that have been happening? Sure, I'd put it up. If it were just based on that, I'd put it at an 8 right now. You cannot rebuild multiple years, have these amazing recruiting classes, then have amazing talent leave and get crushed in games where you should be at least competitive, if not winning. Like, if we play someone from the Big Ten, the Utes should be able to compete. Yeah. Instead, we got beat.
And I don't need W's everywhere. It's just got to be – they've got to look like the same caliber of team because they ought to be. And the other issue that I have with Utah basketball is I'll kind of defend Utah football a lot because their position in the football ecosystem is – pretty disadvantageous, right? They're kind of an upstart program. They're just getting started. They're still making a name for themselves. They don't have a strong brand. And they're building all of that. And I think they're doing a great job, but that takes time. It's a generational task. That's not the case with Utah basketball. Utah basketball is a flagship national program. They pay their head coach extremely well.
Highest.
Yeah, I mean, and very well paid. And I think that's great because that's the kind of program Utah is. Utah should be not competitive with random Big Ten team in my mind. Utah should be a consistent top team in the nation, recruiting at a high level, and putting it together. And I have high expectations for Utah basketball because of their history.
Yeah, and this is the other thing that's bothering me with Larry Kay and his teams lately is early on in his coaching tenure, his teams had like a grit and toughness to them that, you know, you knew they were going to battle no matter what, and they kept games close. Even games they shouldn't have been close, they kept close because they battled, and they went to war for each other, for the program, whatnot. That doesn't seem to be there the last year or two. It's like, where is the tenacity? Where's the want to? It's interesting coaching some basketball, playing basketball, like rebounding, for example, is something you get rebounds because you want to get those rebounds. Rebounds are a hustle stat. You fight for position. You chase down the basketball. You get a rebound. I don't see that toughness, that hustle mentality with Utes anymore. And that's what's concerning to me, is I feel like this team gets in a hole and they're just like, that sucks. Oh, well. And then game's over. They lost again.
Yeah. It feels like he's lost the team. It does. Or is losing the team. Is in the process of losing the team. And it's one thing to lose. It's one thing to lose by a lot.
Yeah.
It's one thing to lose by a lot to BYU. Those are all really bad things that shouldn't happen to this basketball program.
Yeah.
But to watch them play and to see the lack of fight was really disturbing.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because there's players on the team.
Mm-hmm.
We know they're players. I can go watch their high school film, and I can tell you those guys can play basketball. But they're not. And they're not getting physical, and they're not fighting, and they're not – they don't look like they're preparing with the intensity with which you would expect them to prepare. And that falls really squarely on Larry's shoulders. And
it does.
Why I had him at the 7. Is not the loss and not the weaknesses of this team, but the way he seems to be losing the trust and respect and ability to inspire his players.
Totally agree.
Because it doesn't matter how good your players are. If you can't do that, they're not going to play hard. And if they don't play hard, you're not going to win. Just ask, I don't know his name, the Cal coach, you know, or UCLA, or these teams that recruit amazing players, and they don't play. And that's where Larry is going, and it's alarming.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I mean, if the contract wasn't there till 2023 with this big old buyout and crap, I'd say the meter was at like an 8. Like,
yeah.
Couple more strings cut from that cord and he would be out of here, but I just don't see the financial recovery or what means in which this contract can end quickly. But
well, and I think that the athletics department as a whole has much higher financial priorities right now with the expansion than buying out Larry K's contract. So I think you're gonna say, yeah, okay, let's see what you do next year, because after next year the buyout's probably lower, and then some of them
might each year it'll get lower. Yeah.
And then, you know, you'll be in a better place with expansion, and you'll be able to target that as a objective fundraising for the buyout if that's what you want to do.
Well, and maybe Larry Scott can get fired too, and the Pac-12 network can – and
sell some rights and we get a bunch of money. Yeah.
Yeah, and they could make more money instead of losing money versus other conferences. All right, so – ultimately, I don't know that there's much more to talk about in regards to basketball. They play the University of Kentucky next, and they're probably going to get wiped off the floor. It's crazy, like, thinking about it right now, Joseph. We had expectations coming off of last season. Okay, they should play better. Bearfield's another year. Jace Johnson's going to be another year. Tillman, another year. And then you've got this amazing, highly coveted recruiting class coming in, and then Larry K starts scheduling a game against Kentucky and Minnesota, and like you're like, okay, he must think his team's really good this year, and then it's been what it is.
Yeah, that's part of my problem, is I set my expectations pretty high.
Oh yeah.
And that has a lot to do with how you feel about a season. But
that's his job though.
Yeah. He coached us up, and we talked about that. We said, watch who he's scheduling. That's how he's setting expectations, and that was true.
Yeah.
Which means he set expectations way too high.
Yeah.
And that's on him as much as anything.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk a little football. Our bowl game's a couple weeks away, but nonetheless, there's football to talk about. First of all, how tough is Britton Covey?
I think we are only just beginning to discover how tough he is. One of the seven habits of highly effective people is being just a badass little elf, I guess.
I did not know where you were going with that one.
But he's amazing. So the knee injury, he's bouncing back as quickly as possible from that. He tweeted about it. He said, yep. I think it was a torn meniscus and ACL,
yep.
Which is what
ACL meniscus.
As soon as you saw him go down, you're like, whoop, there's the ACL and meniscus. They're gone.
Well, maybe it wasn't when he went right down, but when I saw him on crutches and knew how much contact he took, I was like, yeah, ACL.
It looked bad.
Yeah.
And then I learned from a family member of his, I can't remember who, unfortunately, he broke his wrist in the Arizona game.
Yeah.
And just kept playing football. Although, now that I know that, I went and I looked at his stats. He averaged 6.5 receptions before that injury and 3 receptions a game after that injury. Some of that also has to do with Huntley going down, right? Because he had 4 against Southern California, 5 against UCLA, 2 against Arizona State, which, if memory serves, were both Huntley passes, not Shelley passes. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Shelley even completed a pass in that game. He didn't play terribly well. And then his targets and receptions went way down after that. So I think that he was really an outlet and had a real relationship with Tyler Huntley that he maybe hadn't developed yet with Shelley.
Yeah.
Which makes sense, I think, given the way they throw passes. Huntley's those darts that require quickness and really good hands and a willingness to get hit over the middle are all traits Huntley has,
right.
Whereas Shelley's more a lot more air under his passes means other receivers who are more wide open but maybe less sure-handed were better suited for targets for him. So it makes sense.
The other interesting thing that I just thought of that's completely irrelevant but interesting to me is that when Huntley went down, they said it was between Covey and Chase Hansen on who the emergency quarterback would be. And clearly that's why it was Chase Hansen, is because Covey had a broken wrist.
Yes, Hansen so, would be the guy with a broken wrist. I mean, we don't know which wrist, but still.
The sad part is that Covey's quarterback rating this season, 518.
Oh, perfect. He actually
100%
had
more
touchdowns as a quarterback than as a receiver. He only caught one touchdown pass this year.
Two touchdowns as a quarterback.
It was honestly a little bit of a disappointing year for Covey because of the lack of scoring. But when you add in the passing touchdowns, which you should, it was really effective. And that pass from Covey to Huntley.
Let's caveat it. Look,
best play of the year. Archery pose.
Yes.
I mean, that whole play was just perfection.
So it's interesting because you still have the whole he was coming back from his mission this season and yada yada. And now,
if you watched the Colorado pregame, he definitely still had his mission bod on. He was out there shirtless with the other guys, and there's a. It's no Terrell Perriman.
How much did you enjoy that?
It was great. It was so fun.
You really enjoyed Colorado pregame shows.
I don't know.
Grant, I'm shocked I haven't brought this up already.
I think I make Grant a little bit uncomfortable with my appreciation of the male form.
No, you don't. I find it entertaining. You must have been so excited yet so disappointed because Zach Moss wasn't out there.
You know what I loved about it was how much fun the players were having. Honestly, that's what I loved about that moment was watching them out there as a team and as a group and just having a blast. It was really, really cool. And I think if you talk to Whittingham about it, he talks about how special the bond of this team was,
right.
the brotherhood of this team. And I thought that was an opportunity for fans to really see that on the field because, you know, usually they're just playing ball. But that was cool.
All right. So Covey's probably our best quarterback option, but there are two other people who are actually going to potentially play quarterback in Tyler Huntley and Jason Shelley.
Last week Huntley practiced, full practice with the team. It was a no-contact practice.
But he practiced.
But, yeah, you don't full practice with a broken collarbone. You full practice with a healed collarbone. So he's ready to go.
So if he's ready to go and Shelley's ready to go, who are you starting against Northwestern
in the Holiday Bowl?
I would start Jason Shelley in the Holiday Bowl.
Whoa!
Yep.
I know. No way.
And I am.
You have changed your tune.
No, I haven't.
You canary.
I haven't. I am categorically in favor of Huntley being the anointed day one starter from the very beginning of spring ball and not to have any quarterback controversy going into 2019. But I think that what Jason Shelley has done is truly remarkable. I think he's more than good enough to beat the pants off of Northwestern, and I want him out there. I think that he should have the chance to kind of bring it home, and that's the right thing to do. And then I worry about re-injury, and I worry about game readiness and rust. And so I would say for this last game, because of Jason Shelley's contributions to the team, he should get that bowl start.
I did not expect that from you.
And I will have a great argument with you, and we can in a minute here, about if they're close, because I don't think they're close. I think Huntley is head and shoulders above Jason Shelley as a quarterback. But this game...
Why? Why is he head and shoulders?
He's a more accurate passer. He has a stronger arm. And he's a better runner.
How is he a better runner? Shelley averaged more yards per carry.
Well, that's because he took a lot less sacks and played worse defenses. But the big thing for me is looking at their opponents.
I mean, I guess you could go with Huntley's a better receiver than Shelley. I can see that.
Tyler Huntley is a really good wide receiver, although I think Jason Shelley would make a great wide receiver as well. But for me, it's really about quality of opposition. And then there's a lot of eye test there. Is just it's the arm. That I think that Jason Shelley cannot be scrambling away from a defensive end off his back foot and throw a 60-yard strike to Jalen Dixon. If Jason Shelley's going to throw that pass, he throws it in a clean pocket. And so my money is on Huntley against better defenses. And Jason Shelley only played one really good defense, and he played, bless him, but he played very poorly in that football game.
Well, I'm very glad you didn't say he threw three picks in that game.
No, because he only threw one. I don't want to say I don't care about interceptions, because I do care about interceptions, but it's not about the number of interceptions you throw is a silly stat. What you should be looking at is other things like yards per attempt, completion percentage, total yards.
Yards per attempt, they're pretty darn close.
But if you
they're adjust, super close.
If you adjust for defense,
what I don't is
think
it?
They are well. That's well. We can even see right. We've got.
I mean, I don't have a super spreadsheet in front of me adjusting for defenses, but I will say this. Like, I feel the differences in their numbers.
Huntley played pretty terribly against Washington as well. But I look at Huntley's performances against Washington State, Stanford, and USC, and I just Huntley completed 81% of his passes against Stanford, 76% of his passes against USC. Those are just incredible performances. I think when the lights come on, Huntley turned it on and was excellent. And Shelley had a great game against Oregon, although he only completed 48% of his passes, only completed 47% of his passes against Colorado. And I just think that when you get into really good defenses who are game planning for you, it's going to come back to bite you. And then this may have been game planning in Washington. I don't know what their thinking was there, but I was amazed at how little Shelley ran the ball against Washington's defense, because I thought there was a lot of green space ahead of him, and that made me wonder how it's really hard for me anyway to tell, is this an RPO, is this a designed pass, is this a designed run?
I think part of it was injuries.
But it made me wonder how well he was running the RPO. But if everybody else on the team is injured, right, and he's your only quarterback, you might just say to him, you're not running.
No.
I know that you want to run. I know that you think that's how we're going to win this game. but you're not going to do it. And they, I mean, you watch him run against like that awesome run against BYU, and he had some great runs against against Oregon. So he is a dynamic runner,
right?
And so
I think it's a draw. Personally, running game, I think it's a draw.
Okay, I'll give you draw on the running game.
I'll give you strong arm. Sure, he can throw
and Huntley more escapable under pressure.
Who? Huntley?
Huntley.
I think what you have in the difference between eluding the rush and pocket passing is Shelley is more comfortable hanging in that pocket and taking the hit and trying to make a throw or throwing it away, versus I feel like Huntley would get out of that pocket sooner.
That's true. That's
definitely true. A little bit more.
But he completes passes when he gets out of the pocket, and Jason Shelley doesn't.
But, and that brings me to your point, is you're saying he could throw a laser on the move for 60 yards to Jalen Dixon. But I don't know that I want my quarterback normally making that throw.
Uh-huh. No,
I'd rather him be throwing it out of bounds, running for a few yards, or hitting a guy that's much closer, like the dump off or whatever, instead of trying to huck it 60 yards. And sure, it was a laser that time. I know there's a play that he did that.
There's like five of them.
Amazing. I only remember one, but nonetheless.
And even the game-breaking interception against ASU was another one of those plays, but that was a pass Dixon should have caught. I mean, it was on the money.
True. That was, but that's the thing, is like, I don't know that that's really he can throw a laser for 60 yards on the move. I don't even know if that's the right decision. I don't think it is. So is that really a selling point for me? Probably not. I feel more that Shelley throws a ball with so much more touch on it that it's crazy that there were even two drops that changed the game against Washington. Like, there were two balls that should have been caught.
I just think drops aren't on the passer.
It's
really the receiver's job to catch the darn ball. You got to like try these gloves out. And you watch these guys in practice. You can go watch them. And they can
– practice ain't the game.
They can catch a ball in one hand with their eyes closed. They ought to be able to do it in the game. And these are balls shooting out of the ball machines really, really fast. These are balls that are traveling much more like a Huntley pass than a Shelley pass.
Agreed.
But I just come back to the offense, and it's hard to judge the offense because without Zach Moss, right? But I feel like the offense, when it was clicking, played better with Huntley under center than it played with Shelley under center.
Yeah,
I think accuracy is a big deal. I think accuracy helps with yards after the catch, and Huntley puts the ball in narrower windows and more where it's supposed to be. And Pro Football Focus actually listed Huntley as the 10th most accurate. It was a defense adjusted stat, but it was the 10th most accurate defense adjusted passer in the whole country, based on his healthy performance, which is pretty incredible. I guess my feeling is that Huntley is an underappreciated quarterback, and people don't realize how close he is to being absolutely elite. And Shelley is a little overappreciated because of the
success.
The emotional and leadership contributions that were absolutely essential and needed at the time, and it was such an incredible job that he did stepping in like that, which is why I say let him start against Northwestern. One of the reasons why I say that. But when you just break it down to who is the better quarterback, I honestly don't think it's that close. I think Jason Shelley is a serviceable Power 5, maybe average, slightly below average, slightly above average quarterback, whereas Huntley is a step above average Pac-12 quarterback who, when he's at the top of his game, is as good as absolutely anybody. I mean, his best games are as good as Kyler Murray's best games. They're incredible, and I don't think Jason Shelley can do that. I don't think Jason Shelley can find a 12-yard per attempt game for 78% completion. I just don't think he has that in him.
Okay. Well,
I'm fine with either guy, honestly. I just think Shelley should get a shot next year, whether there's a battle. I mean, look, if Huntley's that much better, it's not going to be a battle, right? They're just going to declare it, and that's going to be what it is.
You can split reps if you want. But I think and expect, and what I'd like to see is for Huntley to get most or all of the reps.
Well, look, the one default here that I'll say that is going to be the reason Huntley starts is he's going to be a senior quarterback in a program where he's been running the offense for 3 years now. I mean, that's just – I mean, he's done it two seasons. He'll do it again next season. That's experience you can't teach, and I think that's really where your difference is between Shelley and Huntley is you give Shelley another year in this offense as far as experience, and he'll be a clear-cut starter.
That may be true.
And – you know, whether Jaden Daniels or whoever else comes and signs as a quarterback with the youths in the future, I think it's going to be hard to get past junior Jason Shelley for the starting spot after Huntley leaves.
And I think that may have had a lot of play in Jaden Daniels' apparent late change of heart. Because you're absolutely right. Jason Shelley is a quarterback, and he's a starting caliber quarterback, and he's a known quantity, and he's not going to be
good
easy.
Leader.
Yeah, and he's not going to be easy to beat out. He's going to have the support of the team and the coaches, and that's a tough situation for a true freshman to come into. Whereas at a school like ASU, you've got Manny Wilkins leaving, and there's a lot of competition, but there's nobody who has an edge yet. If you beat those guys, you're going to have an equal shot to beat those guys on the field, and every single one of these football recruits believes they will win that quarterback.
And rightfully so. And like, why not?
Jaden Daniels has never lost a battle like that in his whole life.
Yep.
And can't even conceive of it. And to be the best possible quarterback, that's how he has to think about it. And that's how Jason Shelley has to think about it. And that's
Agreed.
How Tyler Huntley has to think about it. That's how Troy Williams had to think about it. And so that's how you want them coming in. It's like, well, I'm going to come in. I'm going to win that starting job because I'm the best in the world. And you want your quarterbacks thinking like that and your cornerbacks thinking like that and your defensive tackles thinking like that. Absolutely everybody on the team should think they're the best in the world at what they do and they're going to win that starting job day one.
I want you thinking like that.
Oh, I do.
Okay.
Best podcaster in the world.
But nonetheless,
second
I guess
best
the point is, I think the point that we're arguing is, I don't know how much of a quarterback battle I want, but there should be something, and Shelley shouldn't just get dismissed and automatically behind it.
And I feel like the way to throw him a bone is to say start against Northwestern, and that'll make him feel like he has the respect he's due. And then when you get back to the new year, maybe you do spring ball and you give him some one reps and then you let Huntley.
I imagine, actually, let's just say Huntley's going to start and he's the clear-cut starter, period, end of sentence, right? Senior quarterback, whatnot. I bet Shelley plays most of the reps in spring with the ones.
That's
just because Huntley's not playing and he'll play more once fall ball comes around.
And that may be true and would be another nice way, because I think that you're absolutely right that the coaches should respect Shelley and should treat him with the respect that he's earned by winning football games in the Pac-12.
And more respect than you ever gave him as becoming some kind of safety in the defense, Mr. Silverswig.
It wasn't just me, but you're absolutely right. If you're listening, Jason, I'm sorry.
There you go. Jason, I got it for you. I had your back this whole time,
Jason,
by the way.
Jason's been texting him this whole show. Apologize to me. Get him to apologize. No, neither of us know Jason Shelley.
Nonetheless.
Seems like a very nice young man.
Never mind. All right,
Sorry, that did again.
Nonetheless, hey, look. It's going to be exciting. A couple more weeks until the bowl game. Whoever starts, whatever happens, I hope we kick the crap out of Northwestern. And until then, may you all – good luck to everyone who watches the Kentucky game to survive it. I'll be with you. And otherwise, go Utes.
Go Utes.
Thanks for listening to Ute Talk, brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Find us on Twitter @UteTalkPodcast or email @UteTalk@gmail.com.